Hi, with Truth News Radio Australia, and it's the 15th of November 2012. I'm very pleased to be able to talk to you today. My name's Hereward Fenton, and we'll be broadcasting for the next 2 hours, and I have quite a range of information to bring to you today. I have an interview coming up in about half an hour with a lady from an organisation called Stop Smart Meters Australia. And this is a subject we discussed a bit last week, and I've managed to organise an interview with this group that is working very hard to try and raise awareness about a creeping problem of invasive and underhanded tactics used by our energy companies, which is, of course, endorsed by the government. So that's coming up in the next half hour. In the second hour of today's show, I'm bringing you a replay of an interview that was recorded actually 7 years ago by myself. It's a really interesting little interview, and one which I think you'll find gives you another perspective on some history. And the interview is actually between myself and my mother that I did back in 2005. So I do hope you enjoy that section of the show in the second hour. Now, in the first hour of today's show, I'd like to go through quite a bit of news before we get to our interview in the next half hour. And first off, I really need to just bring up the subject of what's actually happening in Israel right now. In the Gaza Strip, the gates of hell have opened up, and that was the phrase used by Hamas to describe the response that they will be giving to the Israeli attack on a top-level Hamas military leader and then subsequent attacks across Gaza. I actually have some audio here that I'd like to play from ABC News Australia, which gives a quick synopsis of what is going on in the Gaza Strip at the moment.
Tension has increased dramatically overnight in the Middle East with the assassination of a top Hamas military commander. Ahmed al-Jabari was travelling through Gaza when a missile hit his car.
Israel says it killed him because he's a terrorist and has warned that it will continue to target Hamas leaders. Hamas says the gates of hell have been opened. The attack comes after a week of violence between Israel and Palestinian militants in Gaza.
Now, our Middle East correspondent Matt Brown is at Ashkelon in Israel, just north of the Gaza border, and he joins us now on the line. Matt, is this Israeli operation continuing right now?
Yes, it is, Joe. In the last hour, there have been more airstrikes into the Gaza Strip. In Gaza, there have been, in the first hours, 9 people killed, including a 7-year-old girl and, of course, militants. Israel has hit Palestinian security compounds and police stations in Gaza. It's also hit what it says were weapons storage buildings. And importantly, it says it's taken out some storage areas that were keeping longer-range missiles, the type of missiles that could be fired from Gaza to cities like Tel Aviv.
Now, I'll just leave that at that point. Of course, you can get all that news from your mainstream news sources. Just looking at the video there, the footage of the car that the Hamas leader was driving in, it's incredibly surgically kind of cut in half. The techniques of the military strikes now have become incredibly deadly, incredibly precise. But, of course, a 7-year-old girl has been killed. C'est la vie. You know, this is the way it works. Of course, the those who organize these military strikes are very proud of themselves that they're able to target a car in a busy street and virtually not do any damage to any surrounding area. And if you look at the footage here, and the car is, even the front of the car is hardly damaged, but the middle of the car is completely gone, like it's just completely vaporized. I don't know what sort of munition can do that, but the front of the car is completely undamaged and unburned, but the middle part of it is just like it's been scooped out and there's nothing there. But a 7-year-old girl died, and 9 others who may be militants, may not. And of course, that's the technique. That's the way things go. They just say, well, that's just, you know, an unfortunate thing. We didn't really mean to kill that seven-year-old girl. And of course, a lot of people buy into that. But I really do feel, ladies and gentlemen, that this attack now in Gaza is going to escalate. I feel it's actually going to lead to another pretty intense period of hostility and warfare between Israel and its enemies. But the situation is considerably different now to the previous events like this, such as the incursion into Gaza that occurred 2 or 3 years ago now, I think it's 3 years ago, and the incursion into Lebanon that occurred more like 6 years ago now. Because the tension has really built in the Middle East, and of course the hostility between Israel and countries like Syria and Iran and even Russia has increased dramatically as well. So I think it's quite likely that this will be the trigger point for a major escalation, and it may even be the trigger point for what we've been waiting to see with the final coming to fruit of everything that has been predicted about the toppling of various governments, starting with Syria, then Iran. I certainly hope that it does not go that way, and I really think that the way it should go is that Israel should be, of any of these regimes, Israel is the one that should be toppled. But unfortunately, with the support of the US and the vast, I guess, array of forces of the military-industrial complex, it is extremely likely that this will simply be used as a to foment anger, to foment hostilities, and then carry out the conquests that they had planned. And I've got another article here from news.com.au saying that the United States has thrown its weight behind Israel after it launched a barrage of airstrikes on the Gaza Strip and condemned Palestinian militant rocket attacks on southern Israel. And I should point out that there have been rocket attacks. I don't know whether the rocket attacks preceded the attack on the Hamas leader or not. Of course, those rocket attacks are usually pretty hopeless. They occasionally kill people, but mostly they don't hit anything. U.S. State Department has said, we support Israel's right to defend itself and we encourage Israel to take every effort to avoid civilian casualties. We strongly condemn the barrage of rocket fire from Gaza into southern Israel. And we regret the death and injury of innocent Israel and Palestinian civilians caused by the ensuing violence. And again, we have that figure of 9 people killed in airstrikes. But of course, that number is going to rise. So we have here possibly mid-November now, the onset of the eruption of what we feared all through this year. This may well be the beginning of it. It may well lead to a far greater conflagration engulfing many other countries. Let's hope it does not. Now, I'd like to move on with a few other stories today. I've got quite a number of taser-related stories today that have popped up in the news. Some of them are related to the death of Roberto Lodizio Curti, which, of course, was the subject of a coroner's inquest. And there has been findings handed down there. But this case has also raised awareness of tasers, and a number of other stories have come to light. And I'm going to play you a little clip here from a story about the tasering of a 14-year-old boy in Queensland, which really highlights the brutality and unnecessary violence that is associated with taser use. And then we'll move on to look at some of the other stories in the whole array of taser related information I've got to bring to you. So I'll just kick off the story here from ABC News Australia.
The use of tasers by police has come under intense scrutiny after a series of incidents across Australia. Tomorrow, two inquests into cases involving the use of tasers will wind up. In Sydney, the New South Wales coroner will release findings into the death of Brazilian student Roberto Laudisio Curti. And in Brisbane, the deputy coroner will report on the case of Antonio Galliano, who died shortly after being repeatedly tasered by police in North Queensland. Meanwhile, yet another case has come to light. 7:30 has obtained footage of a 14-year-old boy being tasered by police. Tracy Bowden reports.
His treatment is akin to torture. No one deserves to be treated like that.
Solicitor Kevin Henshaw says this taser cam footage shows one of the worst cases of police brutality he's seen in his long career. The boy who's being tasered is 14 years old.
Watching the child's crying and screams, and the fact that the police weren't really concerned. That was the most distressing part of this incident.
It was the end of another classic summer's day at Crescent Head, an idyllic holiday spot tucked away on the New South Wales mid-north coast. But this region has big social problems, fuelled by the toxic mix of youth, alcohol and drugs amongst a high Indigenous population. It's the world this boy grew up in. Those who know him tell 7:30 this young man was up against it from the start. He was destined to end up in trouble. His mother died when he was just 7 years old, and since then he's been raised by a variety of relatives with little stability and no strong role models. As one person put it, this boy grew up in a dysfunctional community awash with alcohol.
Yeah, he very, very angry with society, angry with me, myself, his dad, the police force. But I know deep down in his heart, there's a good kid. There's a great warrior just waiting to come out.
The boy's grandmother, who can't be identified because of her grandson's age.
I'll just pause it there. We'll continue with some of these news stories. Some very, very disturbing information revealed here about police misuse of force. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and we'll be with you for the next couple of hours. Please stay with us. It's going to be a great show. Getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be talking to you today. And I'm going to continue with the coverage we're giving of some of the taser incidents in Australia. And I may actually move to another story. The one there was in relation to a 14-year-old boy. And the fact is, he was probably a bit of a delinquent. He was probably making a bit of trouble, but he hadn't committed any crime. Like, there was no crime at that point that he'd committed. Apparently, he'd been at a party and he'd intimidated some people, and the police were called, and the police chased the boy, and he was hiding under a caravan, and then they capsicum sprayed him and pulled him out under the caravan and started tasering him. And basically, they just kept tasering him over again. They had the barb in his body, and they left it there for about half an hour while they were kind of intimidating him, standing over him, giving him orders, and he wasn't complying. So they just kept squeezing the button and kept, pouring the juice into him. And this is the way the police are conducting themselves all over the country and all over the world. This is what happens when you put these type of weapons in the hands of police and you say, carte blanche, you can do pretty much whatever you like because these weapons can't kill people. This is actually the outcome. Now, I'm going to move to another story here, which is a little bit more hopeful, in that the New South Wales coroner has said that police should face action over the taser death of Roberto Laudisio Curti. So I will just play that to you now.
Police officers involved in a taser incident behaved like the schoolboy savages in the novel Lord of the Flies, in the opinion of the New South Wales coroner. An inquest into the death of Brazilian student Roberto Laudisio Curti in March has found that reckless and excessive police actions led to that outcome. The coroner said the police who tasered Mr. Curti 14 times showed an ungoverned pack mentality and that it's impossible to believe Mr. Curti would have died otherwise. The coroner made five recommendations, all of which have been adopted by the New South Wales Police. But as Tracy Bowden reports, Mr. Curti's family says it doesn't go far enough.
Roberto's only foes during his ordeal were the police. There was no victim other than Roberto. No member of the public who suffered an iota from his delusionary fear.
The final minutes of Roberto Laudisio Curti's life were spent wildly struggling to escape the pain as officers fired tasers at him 14 times and he was lain upon by what was described as half a ton of police. New South Wales Coroner Mary Jerram said it was an abuse of police powers. In some instances, it was even thuggish.
And the actions of some of the officers were reckless, careless, dangerous, and excessively forceful. What eventuated was a frenzy of officers, most of them very junior and inexperienced, half of whom did not even know what Roberto was suspected of having done.
Over 10 days, the inquest heard at times gruelling details about what happened to the Brazilian student that night. After sharing a tab of LSD with his friends, Roberto entered a psychotic state. Agitated and fearful, he hid in a convenience store, snatching two packets of biscuits as he left.
Any car in the vicinity for an armed robbery, city convenience store.
Security cameras captured him wandering aimlessly through the city. Suddenly, he was being pursued by police. Yet, as the coroner pointed out, he posed no threat.
There was no attempt by police to consider his mental state. He was, in the words of Mr. Al Shaeb, just crazy. Left alone, there is not a shred of evidence that he would have caused any harm other than to himself.
The coroner recommended that 5 police officers be considered for disciplinary charges. She also recommended that the actions of police that night be referred to the Police Integrity Commission.
Now, of course, the recommendations of the coroner are not binding, and these officers will quite likely not receive anything more than a slap on the wrist. But, and unfortunately, see, this is part of a pattern that we've seen over and over again. When the excesses of the police and the technologies that they're using, which are really torture technologies, are exposed, we see massive public outcry. We see the media pays quite a lot of attention to it, and we'll see claims that disciplinary action will be taken, disciplinary action should be taken. But then if you follow it up another few months down the track, you'll find out that no one even lost their job. Basically, I mean, a man was killed, right? But really, there were no repercussions for those concerned, those who perpetrated that act. And that's only going to be more likely because of the outcome of another coroner's inquest, which is has also concluded in Queensland. And this is in relation to Antonio Galliano, who died at his home in Brandon in near Townsville in 2009. And unfortunately, in this case, a different coroner, and obviously there are different political pressures and different personalities concerned, so you don't get the same outcomes for the same type of case. In this case, the coroner has found no grounds for disciplinary action against the North Queensland police officers who tasered a man 28 times. So Roberto Ladizio Curti was tasered 14 times. This man was tasered 28 times. One thing I've noticed is that in Queensland, everything seems to be kind of ramped up to a higher level. So what is more of a scandal and what brings more consternation in New South Wales will often tend to be just, it's just standard, you know. In Queensland, different environment, hotter temperatures, I don't know what it is, but there's certainly certainly a tendency for the police there to be a lot more aggressive. I'm going to play to you now a clip from the news story here about the Queensland death and the coroner's taser findings.
Queensland's deputy coroner has cleared police officers who tasered a man 28 times, even though their actions contributed to his death. She's recommended changes to the way tasers are used, but the man's family say they should be banned. Eric Torchek reports.
Antonio Galliano died in 2009 after being tasered 28 times by police. Queensland's deputy coroner has found he died from psychotic delirium brought on by drug use, but that the multiple and prolonged use of the taser contributed to his death. Mr. Galliano's family want the weapons banned.
They're going to keep killing people, and they're going to keep covering up their tracks. That's what I think.
But police are relieved the coroner didn't recommend that, or for officers to be disciplined over the death.
Today's findings that were brought down indicate a real understanding of the complexity and the dangers that our police face every day.
It gives us confidence in that tasers have their place in the use of force model, and police will need to use them as required.
The deputy coroner found the officer who fired the taser breached police policy and may have inadvertently triggered the weapon while trying to restrain Antonio Galliano. She wants police to change how they use tasers and the model they deploy, saying the ease of firing makes the X26 device more akin to a semi-automatic weapon and more likely to be misapplied.
They're actually using the community as human targets, and they're practicing in the community.
Police changed their policies after Mr. Galliano's death, but their taser use has increased.
Well, their taser use has increased. Look, it's not going to change. Incredibly, despite all this attention, despite all this awareness being brought to the subject, even coroners handing down findings, things aren't changing. I mean, I really wish they were. I really wish that we were reaching a point where there was this massive dismay and shock that then leads to a change of policy, that then leads to a rethink of how force is deployed. Because it's thinking about how force is deployed that's the most important thing, rather than thinking about whether we ban this or that weapon or tool. We are going to break now. We'll be back after the break with a really important interview from Stop Smart Meters Australia, a very important group. Please stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And it's my pleasure today to bring you an interview with Maria from Melbourne. Maria is a representative of Stop Smart Meters Australia, a group which is trying to bring awareness to the system known as smart meters, which is a technology which is being introduced into households that can monitor and even restrict energy use. And it can certainly change the price that you pay for energy based on your usage. And there are quite a number of issues that this technology relates to. And we have a lot of concerns about it because of its intrusion into privacy. And it's also its kind of overriding of people's choices and people's freedom to live their life as they please. Now, Maria is from Melbourne, and she actually developed severe electromagnetic sensitivity symptoms after smart meters were installed in her street. She is now acting as a spokesperson for Stop Smart Meters Australia, and we are using an assumed name here. That's not her real name, for privacy concerns. Maria, welcome to Truth News Radio.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you on today. So, Maria, could you just tell us a little bit about your background? I'm very interested to know about your medical problem and also about the objectives that you're trying to achieve with the group Smart Meters, Stop Smart Meters Australia.
Yeah, sure. Look, my own personal story is that up until February this year, I was a healthy person, quite active, no real health issues. And on one day in February, wireless smart meters were installed in our street, and overnight I became very ill. So the main symptoms I developed were I was very dizzy, and I felt quite disoriented and had mental confusion. I couldn't think straight. I found it hard to remember things, so short-term memory problems, and also couldn't articulate. I found it hard to find the words for things. So that made it really hard for me to function. And also I developed severe palpitations that simply would not stop. They were continuous. And after a couple of days, the palpitations were so severe, I had chest pain, and eventually led to me collapsing a couple of times. And I also could not sleep. So from a very healthy person, I suddenly and pretty much overnight developed very disabling symptoms. And when we realized what was going on, I had to move out of home to get better.
Really, that sounds quite horrendous. Do you have any theories? Have you spoken to any experts or medical people that can tell you how this might have been connected to the introduction of the smart meters?
Yes, obviously at the time this all came as a bit of a shock because I didn't really know much about the effects of microwaves and how wireless smart meters even work. But obviously since then I had to do a lot of research also just to help myself cope with what was happening to me. And I've discovered that all these smart meters on homes, they're all emitting microwaves 24 hours a day, and they all chat to each other all the time, so they're always on. They might just communicate your own home's data four times a day, but they are transmitting all the time because the power companies have to keep the so-called wireless grid alive or working or chatting all the time to make sure that that homes are connected and that everything is working.
Yes.
And also your smart meter acts as a relay for all the other smart meters around the area. So they are basically sending out pulse radiation all the time. And this pulse radiation have what we call biological effects on people. So, I have since discovered that hundreds of other Victorians have developed symptoms very similar to mine, sometimes identical.
Right.
And the story is always the same. So there's only really relief of the symptoms when people sort of move to an area without wireless smart meters.
Sure, sure. This is not a subject I'm at all familiar with, so I'm going to just make a couple of suggestions which may be completely off base, but is this any different to mobile phone communications? Because, of course, we're surrounded, we're constantly bathed in mobile phone signals.
Yes. Certainly there is a lot of overlap because the type of microwaves used are similar.
Right.
However, the main difference is that, even if you are somebody who uses their mobile phone quite often and for prolonged times, nobody really uses their mobile phone 24 hours a day.
Right.
And also with phone masts, for example, the people most affected are usually the ones that live closest to the phone mast. So there is some attenuation with distance from the phone mast. Really having a smart meter at your house is like having a phone mast inside your own home. So
okay.
There's no getting away from it, and the effects then are cumulative. So if you're there, if you're in such vicinity all the time and you're subjected to it 24 hours a day, that's why people's immune system in the end break down and develop such extreme symptoms.
Indeed, and of course it's constantly transmitting, so yes, there are some differences, and there may well be differences in the intensity of the radiation, because if it's actually, if they're communicating with each other and they're communicating all day long, it may well be quite different to a mobile phone communication grid. So that's actually something I'd like to look into further on Truth News, and perhaps if you can get back to me after this show with any further information you have on that, and I'd like to get some expert opinion on it as well. Have you actually been able to speak to any experts on this subject?
I have been in email communication to a Swedish researcher, Professor Ole Johansson, who has done to date some of the most in-depth and also important research on the effects on health, on human health, of wireless radiation. And certainly it appears that in terms of the adverse health effects, both in terms of acute symptoms like what happened to me, but also in terms of long-term effects on people who do not necessarily develop any acute symptoms, I think that the research is quite confirms that there are very, very serious health problems with the wireless radiation, and particularly with the wireless smart meters, as unfortunately they have the distinctive character of being present everywhere in the community and also 24 hours a day.
Yeah, it's certainly something that a lot of people aren't aware of, and when you think about it, it is quite an over-the-top kind of technology to be introducing into a standard right across the country, into thousands of homes. I mean, the aim, I believe, in Victoria is for the entire state to be eventually wired up with these meters. Is that where we're headed in Victoria?
Yes, absolutely. That is correct. And that is also what is, I suppose, so tragic, I would have to use that word, about the whole scenario, that you really cannot escape it. And you, if you are one of the hundreds of Victorians that have developed symptoms that don't allow you to live in a wireless smart grid area, then you really have no choice but to consider moving away from the state of Victoria. And I think most people can imagine the social and family and financial repercussions of such a move. And unfortunately, I already know of three people. I know personally of three people, whom two of them I've met personally, that have actually moved interstate to regain their health, to escape the wireless smart grid. So it's certainly something that is, you know, has been introduced without really consultation. I would say with subterfuge, really, as, you know, most people wouldn't have heard about that until they got their letter from the power company about a week before installation. There's very little known about it. And yet, you know, the repercussions, the change in the fabric of our society.
Maria, we're just heading to break. Sorry to interrupt. We're just going to ad break now. We'll be back right after the break. I'm with Maria from Stop Smart Meters Australia. Please stay with us. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and you can find our website at www.truthnews.com.au. Please check it out. Please join our Facebook page and leave some comments if you find anything we've got to say interesting. There's quite a lot of discussion on the website at the moment on one particular subject. If you drop in, you can see that. It's one that's caused a lot of consternation, but look, I won't be getting into that today. I'm going to continue now with our interview, and we have Maria on the line from Melbourne, and we've been talking about smart meters and some of the medical issues there associated with smart meters. Maria is part of a group called stopsmartmeters.com.au. Now, Maria, can you, you've given us a pretty shocking picture there of the effects that the technology can have on health, but let's now look at the effect of the technology on the health of our society and personal freedoms and privacy. Can you run through some of the issues there for us? Thanks.
Okay. Well, obviously, in terms of personal freedoms, the very mandated nature of the rollout means that there is an imposition of really what is an untested technology on people who have not been properly informed and may not wish to have it. Now, the other really, really concerning issue is privacy. So because smart meters really provide energy companies with detailed information about what is happening in people's homes. Now, whether a home is occupied or vacant will be known to them simply by observing the pattern of electricity used. Also, what's being promoted at the moment, and it will be seen, you know, on newspapers and so on, a lot of ad for that is the introduction of home energy monitoring. Now, that will undermine privacy even further. Basically, it will be known exactly what appliances you're using and when. and the entire home will then become a node on the internet. And that means that one's home and device usage will suddenly become available not just to employees of power companies, but to hackers, given that the system is all completely wireless. And anyone can then use the data to analyze when certain people are at home, for example, children, teenagers. So that's a huge concern.
Absolutely. Now, I'm quite interested in the ability to monitor use of appliances. Is this actually a technology which is in practice now, or is this something in the future? Are they able to monitor use of appliances with the current installations?
Yes, they are at the moment, but you have to be provided with a screen that will be wirelessly connected to your smart meter, and then that screen will also communicate with your appliances. That is, if you have bought appliances that have what's called a Zigbee chip, that's a chip that can wirelessly communicate to both your home monitor and the smart meter. So at the moment, it's an opt-in system, and I don't believe a lot of people have gone down that path yet.
Yes.
You do have sign up for that, but the technology is in place.
Of course, it's hard to imagine anyone wanting to sign up to such an invasive snooping kind of technology, a chip that monitors every time you turn on your air conditioner or your blender, you know, or your hairdryer, I assume. I can't imagine to what level it might go to, but it seems ludicrous to me. Now, of course, the authorities are trumpeting this as a great advance because it's going to help energy companies better serve the public. I find the logic very hard to follow. Can you actually explain what their logic is in saying that this is a good thing?
Yes, well, that opens up a Pandora's box of problems. I personally believe that the introduction of the home energy monitoring system is really to give the whole rollout, the whole smart grid system a reason to be, because, any other benefit to the consumer has never been proven. And they are telling us that that will enable us to use when we use our appliances, and then they will introduce time of use tariffs, and we can therefore save by, for example, using our dishwasher or washing machine after 11 o'clock at night, for example. The problem is that the same technology enables what's called peak load management, remote management, which means that the same technology allows power companies to switch on and off our appliances remotely when they have peak demand in electricity. And I think that's really a kind of big brother out of control system.
Of course, and of course it only really makes sense if they can do that, because otherwise it's just relying on you to voluntarily do that. But I think they're actually going to use a pricing structure as a way to, I guess, punish people into doing things at certain times. They're going to increase the price. Is that correct?
That is correct. So, for example, daytime hours, the tariff or the cost of electricity will cost more between, say, 2 o'clock in the afternoon and 10 o'clock in the evening. That's when most people arrive home and need to sort of sort out their kids, make dinner, use electricity, really. But they will say, well, it's in your control because you can choose to, cook your dinner, use your appliances at a different time. But the reality is that all they can do is increase the price during that time.
Yes, and these poor people won't be able to make that decision. I mean, the parents who've got to bring their kids home from school can't say, well, we're not going to have our, dinner at normal time today. We're going to have dinner at 10 p.m. to save money. I mean, that's ludicrous. I just find that absolutely unbelievable. But one other thing, Maria, I don't understand. There is already and has been for many years a system called off-peak electricity, which is you pay less if, for example, you have your hot water heater on during the early morning hours. And that seems to have worked quite well. I don't understand this new system. I don't quite understand how it differs from that to start off with.
Well, I suppose it differs in the sense that there will be more different times of use. There will be like peak time, off-peak time, shoulder times, and so on. But they're really, in terms of benefit to the consumer, independent studies commissioned in South Australia by the company ETSA, the energy company, has proven that such a system does not alter customers' usage of electricity, and that's why in South Australia they have not gone ahead with the rollout there. So there is actually I am not aware of studies that have proven that such a use of time off use tariffs actually alters customers' electricity usage, and it does not alter peak demand.
Absolutely, because the idea then is that people will be so aware of, oh, gee, it's costing me so much more, I'm going to change my behaviour. And I guess the difference you're saying between this and the previous off-peak system is that was just a very simplified system where it was cheaper, I believe, between sort of midnight and 6 a.m. and to the rest of the day. But this is going to have a variety of different times during the day when electricity costs different prices. But is the actual pricing going to go down to your appliance usage as well? Like, are you going to be paying more for using the dishwasher at 3 p.m.? Is it actually going to go to that level that you'll be charged for your use of an appliance?
Well, look, we don't know. It's too early to say now. Obviously, the technology is in place because with the Zigbee chips and the home monitor, the power companies will have detailed knowledge of exactly what appliance a home or family is using at what time. So there is the technology is there. There's nothing to stop them from going down that path, but nothing has been mentioned about that particular issue so far.
Absolutely. And, of course, as you've said before, the ability for them to switch off appliances means that if they find that using the price as a means of changing behaviour doesn't work, they can always just turn the appliance off. So you might, have a shower and get the hairdryer out and suddenly, sorry, you can't dry your hair, it's 3 p.m. You can only dry your hair between 8 and 10 a.m. I mean, as ridiculous as that sounds, that is really quite a realistic outcome, isn't it? That's a realistic scenario.
Oh, yes, that's already on the cards. There's already, it's called peak load management. That's already on their cards, on their plan. So that's not something we're thinking of. That's already something they're planning to do.
Wow. Well, this looks like something, yet again, yet another intrusion, yet another hand of the big brother coming down. We've seen so much over the years, and we cover this kind of thing on this show, Maria, but this one has kind of sneaked in, and I was hardly even aware of it. I've known people have been talking about it for several years. I believe that there is discussion, and I saw a story, I think I posted it on our Twitter feed, that the federal government is looking at rolling out this across Australia. Do you know anything more about that?
Yes, I certainly do. Well, the white paper on energy has recommended that at the COAG meeting, which is coming up in early December, the federal government will offer incentives to state governments to roll out this kind of technology in their respective states. But, it will then be up to the individual states to accept it and to run with it. And we sure hope that that's not going to go ahead because, certainly some people are planning to move interstate to safeguard their health and privacy.
Absolutely. We're just getting to the end of the hour, Maria. I would love to get you on the show again. There's a lot more we can talk about. I just want to briefly mention that you've got a forum coming up on the 25th of November, 1 to 4 p.m. at Oakley Grammar Community Conference Centre in Oakley, and I believe that's in Melbourne. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And we'll have two great guest speakers on the day.
Terrific.
So I hope everybody can come and just inform themselves and make up their own mind.
Thanks, Maria. We'll have to wind it up now. It's been great talking to you. We'll be back for the second hour. Stay with us. And you're with Truth News Radio Australia.